of Sivan, and Be'ezrat Hashem, all of the learning should be Le'iloi Nishmato. Again, the 20th of Sivan, as someone reminded me, is in fact a very, very significant date. It was the date of a very major massacre during the Khmelnytsky pogroms in the 1600s. And unfortunately, sometimes the later tsaros make us forget about the earlier tsaros with the Holocaust and everything else. But the Khmelnytsky pogroms were quite devastating. And in fact, proportionally, it may have been even equal or worse than the Holocaust. Many great Gedolei Torah died in these massacres, including the Shach, Rav Shapsi Cohen, one of the greatest of the poskim. And the darkness that it brought to Eastern Europe was actually responsible for the rise of Shabtai Tzvi. The reason why Shabtai Tzvi, the false Mashiach, had such a following was because of the tremendous demoralization, and people grasped at straws for any little bit of hope. And that in turn was a tremendous devastation spiritually for Klal Yisrael. So the Magen Avraham brings that many kehilos actually fasted on the 20th of Sivan, and they recited Slichos. That's less common today, but it's still a day of great significance in the tragic events of Jewish history. What I want to talk about today, again, we're back to Mishlei, but I want to connect something in Mishlei to the Parsha that we read yesterday. We read yesterday about the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. That is indeed the name of the Parsha, Bahaloschas Haneros, when Aaron is commanded, when you cause the candles to come up. First of all, Rashi brings a very, very interesting medrash, Bahaloscha, when you cause the flame to go up. That means when you light the menorah, when the Kohen Gadol lights the menorah, he must leave the flame on the wick until there is a shalheves, until there's a flame that comes from within. Right? Because when you heat the wick long enough, even the inside gets hot, and then a shalheves is ole, it arises me'elaha. And many Meforshim point out that that is exactly the remez of chinuch, because a human being is called a ner, as we will see from Mishlei. And the purpose of chinuch is not to change somebody and not to impose something that is foreign to them, but to bring out the greatness and the goodness that is already within them. That the shalheves should be ola mi'eleha, there shall be a shalheves that arises from within. And this, of course, is the meaning of the famous pasuk in Mishlei that we've already talked about many times, Chanoch lenar al pi darko, train a child according to his way, his way. And the Vilna Gaon says, every person comes into the world with their unique derech in how they will serve Hashem. And the purpose of chinuch is to help somebody discover what their derech is. Some say that too much of the Torah world reads it with a Hasidish pronunciation, Chanoch lenar al pi darki, which, again, it's not meant to be critical of Hasidim in particular, but train a child according to my way, but really it has to be darko. It has to be Chanoch lenar al pi darko. And this is a very, very important lesson. In fact, this might be the remez in Bris Milah, that when a child is inducted into the covenant of Abraham, how do we induct him? What is the sign of the covenant? Exposing and revealing that which is already there. Your megala, the panemius, right? You uncover what is there. You don't add anything. You don't try to change. And even what we call change is simply discovering that which is already within. And that is the remez of the shalheves ola me'elaha. So what I want to do is I want to cover two psukim in Mishlei in which the idea of ner is used. I will probably only do one this week and one will probably be next week. But the first one is in Perek Chaf. I think it's Pasuk Yud Gimel. Unfortunately, I didn't bring him in today, but I think it's Chaf Yud Gimel. And this is a very famous pasuk that I know that you know. And again, it's actually very appropriate on a yahrzeit, indeed. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam Chofes Kol Chadrei Batan. The second half is not so familiar. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the soul, the neshama of a person, is a chafzayin. So it's chafzayin. Thank you. Chafzayin. Right. The other one is vav yud gimel. Right. Chafzayin. Ner Hashem nishmas Adam. The neshama of a person is a candle, is a ner of Hashem. Chofes, who searches, kol chadre vaten, even the innermost parts of the innards. Now, in fact, you may recall, atah chofes kol chadre vaten, you search out the innermost guts of a person. Everything that's going on in a person is actually a phrase that we say in the Vidui of Yom Kippur. Atah chofes kol chadre vaten, and that is taken from Mishlei, where we say, ner Hashem nishmas Adam chofes kol chadre vaten. So here, the human soul is compared to a ner, a candle of Hashem. Okay, we'll explain this in a moment. The other pasuk, which we're not going to get to today, also uses ner, but not to describe the human personality, but to describe the power of Torah and mitzvos. Again, a very famous pasuk in Perek Vav, ki ner mitzvah. A mitzvah is like a ner, the Torah or, and the Torah is the light that pierces the darkness. V'derech chayim, and the road of life is tochachos musar, is the instruction. Huh? Okay, I got that wrong too. Okay, I'm batting 1,000 today, but okay. Why did I have Yud Gimel in my mind? But okay. So what do you see? So these are two different comparisons of ner, right? These are the two appearances of the word ner in the book of Mishlei. One is ner Hashem nishmas Adam, and the other is ki ner mitzvah v'Torah or. So today we're going to talk about ner Hashem nishmas Adam. The candle of Hashem is the neshama of a person. In fact, this is the makor why we light candles in a shiva house, and we light candles in a yard site, because it is a remez to the neshama. So first, the second half of the pasuk is a little enigmatic, right? The human soul is like a candle lit by Hashem. Chofes, he searches, kol chadrei vaten. So who is the subject of chofes? He searches. Who is the he in that pasuk? So the Medrash of Chazal actually say that he is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, indeed, you see from the Vidui that that's how the Vidui understood it, right? Atah chofes kol chadrei vaten is going on Hashem. So apparently, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola who wrote the Vidui understood chofes kol chadrei vaten is going on the Ribono Shel Olam, and what it means is through the neshama, Hashem scrutinizes everything that we do. The neshama is Hashem's spy, the Medrash says. Now, why Hashem needs a spy is not so clear, but every night when we go to sleep, our neshama sneaks out and gives a report to the Ribono Shel Olam about everything that we have done and thought. That's the mechanism. And therefore, literally it means Hashem uses the neshama as his flashlight to search out everything that we do. The Medrash gives a mashal to a son-in-law, let's say like Jared Kushner, who married the king's daughter. And the king, or the president, I call him the king, they now say Trump is Melech Yisrael, but people say, okay, whatever. And the king knows everything. The king knows everything the son-in-law does. And the son-in-law says, how do you know everything? And the king says, well, didn't you marry my daughter? She tells me. So therefore, the neshama, which comes from God, is the one that reports. Again, the Medrash is very, very difficult, because what exactly is the mechanism that Hashem needs, like the neshama, to report? I mean, Hashem knows, but okay. But Rabbeinu Yaina learns the pasuk very, very differently. And I think most people, when they learn the pasuk, they actually understand it like Rabbeinu Yonah more than even the Medrash of Chazal. And that chofes is going on Adam. Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. Right? The neshama is the candle of Hashem. Chofes, through which a person can truly understand everything within him that's going on. In other words, we make all sorts of decisions in our lives. And sometimes our decisions are based on convenience, they're based on taiva, they're based on anger, they're based on yetzer haras, they're based on all sorts of distortions. But we fool ourselves into thinking that we're tzaddikim. Right? In other words, a person will often say, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say, whenever somebody began, so whenever somebody came to him with a taina that they were hurt, and they would say something like, it's not a personal thing, I'm just upset about the principle of it. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, whenever somebody says, I'm upset about the principle, it's always personal. Because Rav Yaakov says, are you the very first person in history who was ever wronged? Obviously not. Did you get so upset when other people were wronged? Probably not. So how can you say it's the principle of it if you're upset when it's you? So what Mishlei is saying is, according to Rabbeinu Yaina, is Hashem gave us a godly neshama. That's a candle lit from God, as if God is the flame and he's lit the candle from his flame. And therefore within us is a godliness and a goodness that can truly understand what is in us, where we go wrong. That is the mechanism from which tshuva is possible. Because tshuva comes when a person is able to be makir the emes. And that comes from the ner Hashem nishmas adam. Right? So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the chofes kol chadrei voten is not going on God scrutinizing us, but it's our own ability to scrutinize ourselves through the goodness of the neshama that can perceive truth, even if sometimes we can fool ourselves and go in a wrong way. But be it as it may, the first part of the pasuk, that a human soul is a candle lit by Hashem. So the Tanya in the last perek brings a very intriguing passage from the Zohar. And, you know, the Zohar has all sorts of interesting characters. It's not always clear if these are real characters or they're used as mishalim. But one of the recurring characters in the Zohar is the Anuka. The Anuka is the wonder child, some child who was brilliant and had Ruach HaKodesh, and he would often say all sorts of beautiful teachings. Right? This is the Anuka. So in the Zohar in Parshas Tetzaveh, which also talks about lighting the menorah, they bring a Dvar Torah from this Yanuka. Now, we don't know how old the Yanuka was. Was he bar mitzvah? Was he 4 years old? We really don't have a sense, but he was still a child, I guess at least below bar mitzvah. And the Yanuka asked the Kasha, it says in Koheles, HaChacham Einav Barosho, a wise person has eyes in his head. So the Anuka said, and people who aren't wise don't have eyes in their head? Everybody has eyes in their head. Why are you praising a chacham? Because einav barosho. So the Anuka answered, above every person's head is the light of the Shekhinah. And that is the Ner Hashem, that's the candle of God, which is the light of divine radiance that is surrounding the head of everybody, at least every Jew. And Einav Barosho means he focuses his attention on that which surrounds his head. Barosho doesn't mean his eyes are physically located in his head, but Einav means his interest, his vision, his focus is not on the guf, his focus is on Rosho, what is surrounding his head, and that's the Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that is the revelation of godliness surrounding him. There is indeed the Shekhinah above our heads. Even in Kriya Shema Lamita, right, we say, Mimini, to the right is Michael, V'yal Roshi, above my head is Shekhinah scale. That's even when we're asleep, Kal V'chomer when we're awake. We have the Shekhinah above our head. But that, so that's the Anukis interpretation of Hechacham Einav Berosha. But then the Anuka goes further, and the Anuka says, but every candle needs fuel. You need oil. So somehow you have to give oil to this candle to enable it to burn. And that oil is your Masim Tovim. Your Masim Tovim give fuel to the candle, keeping the Shekhinah above your head. And this is indeed another pasuk in Koheles, Shemen al Roshcha al Yechsar, which literally means do not diminish the oil on your head. Now, again, the simple meaning is people used to anoint themselves with aromatic oil, but the Kabbalistic interpretation is in order to keep the candle ignited over your head, you need the fuel of Torah and Masim Tovim, which is the Shemen al Roshcha al Yechsar. So it turns out that the Anuka is offering two very beautiful interpretations of these two psukim. One is Hechacham Einav Berosho, and the other is Shemen al Roshcha al Yechsar. But the Baal HaTanya adds a third element to this. Very, very beautiful. And this is the very last perek, perek Nun Gimel, of the first section of Tanya, which is called Sefer Shalbeinonim, the book of the middle of the road, because the whole Tanya is about the idea that a Beinoni doesn't just mean somebody who is 50-50, because who's going to be 50-50? One minute you're 50-50, and the next minute you're 51-49, one way or the other, and then it changes. Beinoni as a numerical concept almost makes no sense, the Baal HaTanya says, because that changes by the second. But rather, Beinoni refers to every person who is still struggling with the Yetzer Hara, which is by far 99.99999% of people. And sometimes you can be the biggest tzaddik in the world, but you're still a Beinoni because you're working on things. And you could even be a Rasha, God forbid, and still be a Beinoni because you're struggling. The Rasha is the person who's given up the fight, and the tzaddik is the person who somehow has killed the Yetzer Hara. These are madregas that are very, very rare. Beinoni, according to the Baal HaTanya's unusual definition, is the vast majority of everyone. And the first part of Tanya is said to be the book of Beinoni. Now, Chabad has a Mesorah that the Alter Rebbe also wrote a book. What does the tzaddik do? Once you've killed the Yetzer Hara, if there's such a thing, what do you do with the rest of your life exactly? So it is said that the Baal HaTanya also wrote a book for tzaddikim, but that book was destroyed because the world was not zocha. So we don't have the book of tzaddikim. There's another Mesorah, I'm not sure if it's Chabad or from Breslov itself, that Rav Nachman of Breslov's books, Likutei Maran, are the books for Rishoyim. Now again, this is not meant to be an insult, meaning the idea is that even if a person has fallen very, 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 very low, the teachings of Rav Nachman are a mechanism that can bring him up. So it's not negative to say Likutei Maran is the Sifran Shel Rishaim, and the Tanya is said to be the he called it Sefer Shel Beinonim, and Sifran Shel Tzadikim we actually don't have. It's kind of, when you get there, you know, talk, you know, we'll find you one, but you know, that's such a madrega. So in the last perek of Sefer Shel Beinonim, which is Chelek Rishon of the Tanya, the largest part of the Tanya, he brings this passage of the Zohar and the Anuka, and he says, you know, when you put oil in a candle and the oil burns, what essentially happens is the oil gets used up. It gets consumed and it turns into the fire, meaning as part of the way it feeds the fire is by its getting consumed and used up. So he says, the oil which fuels the divine light is the animal soul within me. That animal soul that craves pleasure and craves hedonism. But when I dedicate even my physicality to God, the animal soul gets used up and burnt up and gets converted into divine light. And that is the shemen that brings the Gilui Shechina. See, the point he's making is that it's precisely the Beinoni who struggles with the animal soul that brings the Shechina into the world. Not necessarily the Tzaddik, because it's the struggle that brings the Shechina. When you convert the animal soul into divine light, that brings the Shechina into the world. Again, a very, very moving and very beautiful, because the Bala Tanya is basically telling people that when you struggle in your service of Hashem and you think that's such a failure, it's what gives Hashem the greatest nachas of everything, that you're struggling. Indeed, they say the name of the Bala Tanya, that it is the struggle in the war against the Yetzer Hara that is the victory. It's not the victory per se, it's the struggle that is the victory, even if you're not always going to be successful. So this is how the Bala Tanya understands the idea of Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, that it's actually going on my animal soul. My animal soul is the fuel that, when it gets converted to Ruchnius, keeps the light of the Shekhinah above my head, my connection to Hashem, at all times. Now we know that the Chiddushi Harim says, although it's not the word nishmas, which is because that's the pasuk in Mishlei, but he says the word nefesh. Nefesh is a Rashi Teva, is an abbreviation for ner, pesila, shemen. Ner, candle, actually means a receptacle. The cup is called a ner. When we think ner, we think a wax candle. But ner means the receptacle. Pesila is the wick. And shin is shemen, the oil. Nefesh. What am I? I make myself a receptacle to receive the light of Hashem. I am the ner, pesila, and the shemen, to receive that divine light, right? This is what the Chiddushi Arim says. Now, what's interesting is this. Chazal have a number of reasons why a human soul is compared to Ner, besides all that we've talked about Kabbalistically. They actually have two pragmatic teachings, which are very practical. One is that a Ner, a katan madlik es hagadol, meaning you can light even a big bonfire from a little match, right? The nature of fire is, even the smallest spark can ignite something very big. So too, in Ruchnius and Torah, a person must be humble and modest, in which he's willing to learn even from the Katan. We learn from your Talmud, you learn from everybody. And the Katan also has to believe that he has something to offer as well. So one lesson is, the analogy to Ner is a lesson in humility. Ezu Chacham, as Nid Perkei Avos says, who is a wise person, halomed mikol adam, you learn from everybody. I remember a picture, this is really a tremendous advertising boost. I don't know how much money Art Scroll got out of it, but somehow they managed to take a picture of Rav Elyashiv looking at the Hebrew Shatnestein Gemara. That's the Art Scroll of Hebrew Gemara. And he was looking at it. Now, why was he looking at it? I mean, he was looking at it because maybe somebody came up with something that perhaps would be new to him. Not too likely, but maybe, just maybe. So you see that he was willing to learn from works that are far, far, far below his madrega. That's tremendous advertising. You know, even Rabbi Yashiv uses our Gemara. You know, that's pretty good, and the like. So that's an example of Katan being Madlik es Hagadol. And the second medrash is that not in terms of how you receive, the willingness to receive from someone lower than you, or you think is lower than you, but also the willingness to give. When one Ner lights another Ner, it does not get diminished. Rather, you've created two candles instead of one. And that's an important lesson in Chesed, that when we give to others, whether it's tzedakah, money, or whether it's time, or whether it's effort, or whether it's care, you're not losing, you're not becoming diminished, right? So these are two very practical lekachim that we get from comparing a human soul to a ner. Katan madlik es agadol, and a ner is not diminished when it gives out to others. In this sense, I just want to point out that in last week's part, not yesterday's, but the week before, in Parshas Naso, which is the biggest parsha in the Torah, longest parsha in the Torah, we read about the 12 Nisim. And the 12 Nisim, every single day, starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan till the 12th of Nisan, they bring an elaborate offering, and everybody brings the same korban over and over and over again. That's why, although it is a very long parsha, for a Bal Koreh, it's not unusually difficult, because the trup, the Tamei HaNagina, for the 12 Nisim, is exactly the same. I mean, 99% the same. There, once in a while, there's a tiny difference, because some of the wording is different for Yisachar. And the question that one might ask is, why repeat this over and over and over again? After all, we have a Masorah. The Torah does not waste words. If the Torah could say something with one letter, it will not even say an extra word. So here the Torah could have said, Nachshon ben Aminadav, the tribe of Yehuda, the Nasi who jumped into the Yamsuf first, he brought A, B, C, D, E, and F, etc. And then it could have said, V'yasu chein, kol hanasiim, and everyone else did the same thing. Why repeat over and over and over and over and over again? So there are two reasons. One reason, and both of them tie into Ner, interestingly enough. So all of these things connect to Ner. Reason number one is, although all the Nisim objectively did the same exact action, in fact, everybody's korban was different, because every single Nasi brought those objects with specific kavana that connected to the unique relationship that Hashem had with that Shevet. And therefore, it's not repeating the same thing 12 times. There were 12 different korbanos. The Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Naso, which is an absolutely huge Medrash, goes through each Shevet. So for example, if you have a kafachas asara zahav malaya ketores, you had one big spoon that weighed 10 gold pieces filled with incense. Every Nasi brought that. But what Yehuda meant with it was not the same as Yisachar meant with it. Yehuda meant some things, Yisachar meant other things. So here you see a very important yesod, which ties into the pasuk, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, that even if objectively people are doing the same thing, they must bring their own individual connection to Hashem to it, to have that connection. So it really highlights the idea that within a supposed uniformity, there is in fact diversity and difference and individuality. That's reason number one, and that connects to Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. But what connects to the idea of Ner is reason number two, and that is, it's interesting that for all the Nisim, it always says, Bayom Harishon, Nasi Livnei Yehuda, Nachshon B'Aminadav, and then it says it for every other Nasi the same way. The only Nasi where this wording does not apply is Yisachar, Nesanel Ben Suar, who is the second Nasi, where it says, Bayom HaSheni, Hikriv Nesanel Ben Suar, Nasi Yisrael. And Chazal actually have a drasha, Hikriv Nesanel Ben Suar, doesn't mean Nisano ben Suar brought a korban, but it means he sacrificed himself. Nisano ben Suar is the object of the sentence, not just the subject. What do we mean by that? What we mean by that is, Nachshon ben Aminadav brought a beautiful korban of animals and flour and gold and silver. Beautiful, beautiful. The next day, it is Yisachar's turn. Yisachar now has to decide, should I bring a better one and make it a competition? Because Yisachar is the critical character here. Nisano ben Suar. Hashem didn't tell them how to bring it. This is their own decision. Should I make this keeping up with the Nachshon type of thing? Or should I say we're all serving Hashem and we're all on the same page? You know, Lahavdil, when George Washington, again, Lahavdil, when George Washington became the first president of the United States, there were no precedents. And there were many people who wanted to give him a title, Your Excellency, Your Majesty. And he said no. He says he determines the nature of what that office would be. Even the concept of only serving two terms. George Washington easily could have been president for the rest of his life. The Constitution at that time did not prohibit, I mean, it's a four-year term, but it did not prohibit unlimited service. But he said, we're not kings anymore, we're not emperors, we'll serve two terms. And it was not until Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who served four terms because of the, well, he didn't serve four terms, he was elected to four terms and he died towards the beginning of his fourth term, where because of the Depression and World War II, that the Republicans took nekama and they made a constitutional amendment that no president could serve more than two terms. But until then, it was only a minhag. It wasn't a din. It was the minhag. And the minhag was miyusad by Washington that set the pattern for what a president should be. Whether Trump is changing it is another question. So Lahavdil, Nisanel Ben Suar had to make a decision whether this will be a competition and an ego trip, or whether it will be a collaborative sharing in which one person doesn't try to be better. Rather, we learn from each other and we don't become diminished from each other's successes. And therefore, he sacrificed himself, meaning he sacrificed his ego, he sacrificed his gaiva, because he said, when we're serving Hashem, we should not think about our kavod and our gaiva. And that's why by the ner, the katan can learn from the gadol, and that is why you can give to others and you're not diminished. All of that goes to a sense of anava. In that sense, there's a beautiful saying from Rav Zusha, the famous Hasidic Rebbe, who is the brother of Rebbe Elimelech of Lizhensk. And Rav Zusha said, everyone knows that there's a famous thing Rav Zusha said, everybody knows that Hashem is not going to ask me, why wasn't I Avram, why wasn't I Moshe? He's going to ask me, why wasn't I Zusha? And that I'm afraid of. That's a famous thing. Another thing Rav Zusha said was also famous, again, that's not the one, I'll get to the one I want to say in a moment, is that somebody once asked him as a Ritcher Maggid, how can you thank Hashem for the bad like the good? How is that possible? So he said, go ask Rav Zusha, my Talmud. So he goes to Zusha, and Zusha's living in poverty, and there's no food in the house, and the kids are in rags, and there's water coming through the roof. And he says, Zusha, the Rebbe says I have to ask you, how do you thank Hashem for the bad like you thank Hashem for the good? And Rav Zusha looks very confused and he says, I don't know why you're asking me. Nothing bad has ever happened. So that was kind of the answer to that. But the one about Rav Zusha I want to quote is similar to the first one but a little different. He said the following. He said, if Hashem would offer me that I could change places with Moshe Rabbeinu, I could be Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all Nevi'im, I could be Avraham, I wouldn't take it. Because what does Hashem get out of that deal? Before the switch, there's one Avraham and one Zusha. And after the switch, there's one Avraham and one Zusha. So yeah, it's great for me. But how does that add cover to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You see, he says, now, if Hashem would offer to make two Avrams, maybe I'd consider it, you know, then you have a ribuy of kavod shamayim. But just a switch? Who gets from that? That's just ego. That's just gaiva. And he said, I would decline the offer. So the Chazon Ish writes in Emunah Bitachon that even the great chesed we do is sometimes tainted with ego. He gives an example, which I mentioned before, and it's a very high standard. I don't want people to feel guilty about this, but it's a little bit of a guilt trip test. And that is, let's say you love to have guests for Shabbos. You or your husband, whatever the scenario would be. So whenever you see someone in shul who looks like they don't have a place, you want to invite them. Again, nashim to nashim, anashim to anashim, whatever it would be, but you want to invite them. And it comes to Shabbos and you have nobody to invite. And you feel so bereft that you're not going to have achnasas orchim. And finally you see a stranger, a new face. And you're so happy and you go over to them, oh, shalom aleichem, it's so wonderful to see you. It would be my wonderful honor and pleasure if you could join us for a Shabbos Suda. You know, we would love to have you. And the person tells you, oh, thanks so much, but just 2 minutes ago, somebody else invited me. So, stop the action. Are you happy or upset? So the Chazon Ish says, if your true motivation is you see somebody who needs something and you feel bad that, you know, they don't have a place to go, then the Chazon Ish says, assuming this is a good place that they're going to, it should logically not make a difference if it's you or them. What's the difference? But if there's an ego thing, I want to be the one who does hospitality, then you're going to feel a little bad because I didn't have a chance to show off my cholent or whatever it is. Now, God forbid, that's not to say that, you know, don't do chesed unless you could reach that level where all you care about is the other person. Certainly when Chazal say, mitoch shelo lishma, doing mitzvahs, even if there's a little bit not lishma, can still be a wonderful, wonderful thing. But the Chazon Ish is giving us a deep probe that there is a lot of egotism in our mitzvahs, sometimes more than we might think that there is. And the lesson of Nisano Ben Suar is, it's not about us. It's about the glory of Hashem. In this connection, they tell a beautiful maisa with the Panovich Rav. Panovich Rav was the Rav, of course, in Panovich in Lita. And there were 800 Rabbanim, communal Rabbanim in Lithuania. 799 were killed in the Holocaust. The Panovich Rav was literally the only communal Rav of Lithuania that survived. And he was a great, great Gadol B'Torah, but he was a man with an obsession because he saw the fact that he survived as a Nes Min HaShemayim, and there must have been a reason for it. And he devoted his life to tremendous building of Torah, but in all ways, building yeshivas and building orphanages and building hospitals, and, you know, in Ruchnius and Gashmius, everything. And he spent much of the year traveling. In fact, he once said his biggest korban, the biggest sacrifice he gave to Hashem, were all of the sfarim that he could have written, and all of the shiurim that he could have given, and all of the Torah that he could have learned. He gave it up, he said, for Klal Yisrael and Kiddush Hashem. He was not the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich. I mean, he was the guiding force, but, you know, he was not the Rosh Yeshiva. He was away all the time. I still remember, the Panovich Rav was Nifter in 1969. I was a ninth grader then. I was in Eretz Yisrael, and my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ruderman, was a very, very close friend of Rav Kahaneman. And I was a ninth grader, so the whole yeshiva got together. The Rosh Hashiva gave a hesped. He was crying. And it was in Yiddish. I didn't understand anything at the time. I was kind of in a reverie, kind of half asleep. But all of a sudden, he did something which I have never seen since. Maybe you've seen it. I have never seen this before. And I certainly have not seen it since. He pounded and he said, everyone should sit on the ground. I've never seen that. Sit on the ground like Tisha B'Av, or even more than Tisha B'Av, in Avelis over the Panovich Rav. So the Satmar Rebbe said about the Panovich Rav that when people were debating after the moon launch whether there's life on other planets, he says, I know for sure there is no life on other planets, and I don't need any rayas, because if there would be life on Mars, the Panovich Rav would have been there collecting money. If he was not there, there is nothing there. He says it's a dover. He says it's a dover pashut. So he was a great, great fundraiser. First of all, because number one, besides being a gadol b'Torah and a great tzaddik, he was ma'uriv ben abrios in a very extraordinary way, in a way that you don't really see today. That much He could make jokes and stories and meisim and, you know, yeah, everything was, he was able to connect with every possible person, religious, non-religious. His famous joke about Yom Ha'atzmaut in Panovich, so at least then, I don't know about today, they didn't say Tachanun, but they didn't say Hallel. So somebody said, hey, if you're a Zionist, you know, you believe in the Medina, why don't you say Hallel? He says, he follows Minhag Ben Gurion. He says, what do you mean I'm not a Zionist? No Tachanun, no Hallel in Yom Ha'atzmaut. So exactly what Ben Gurion does and the like. So the story goes that he once came to Chicago to raise money. And he came the same day that a mashulach from the Vardik in Bnei Brak came. And the Mivardik was a small yeshiva. It's obviously, even today, it's much smaller than Panovich. And when the Mashulach saw the Panovich Yerav, he turned white because he figured, I'm not going to get any money today at all because here you have like the greatest fundraiser in the world. So at first he was despondent. But then he said, okay, listen, okay, I don't have to collect money. I'll sit down. I'll get chizuk. I'll hear a shir. I'll hear a Torah. Okay, it's kedai for me. It's for me. I'm going to listen. So the Panovich Rav gave his usual speech with Torah and Musar and Hashkafa and Meisim and humor and jokes, everything. And people were pulling out their checkbooks and they were going to give generously because he came every year and they knew him and they loved him. And then at the end of his speech, he said, oh, by the way, there's a very chashuv yid, also from Bnei Brak, who's collecting for his wonderful yeshiva that I know of. Everything you would give to me, please give to him today. So this mashulach got much better than he ever had. This was the best day he ever had. So he goes over to the Rebbe and he says, you know, I'm so, so grateful. This is so wonderful. But how could this be? You traveled all the way from Eretz Yisrael. And then, you know, jets were not as fast then. You know, it was much slower. The flights took longer. It took 15, 16 hours. How can you give up everything? How can you give up all the money you collected? And the Panovich Rav said, what do you mean give up? He says, I don't collect for the Panovich Yeshiva. I collect money for Torah, for Hashem. If enough money was raised, let's say, to support 10 people learning Torah for a week, I'm making up a number, the Panovich Rav said, I don't care if those 10 people are learning in Panovich, or those 10 people are learning in the Vardik. He says, it makes no difference to me that the amount of Torah that's being learned is the same. We're not in competition. We're on the same page. We're on the same team. Now, suffice it to say that even for great Rosh Hashivas, this is a very, very rare quality. The other person who followed that midah was the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, Zichrono Livracha, who in many, many ways was very much like the Panovich Rav in terms of being Ma'urav Bein Abrios, in terms of building Torah. He made Mir a gigantic thing. In fact, there's a nice joke. Somebody was looking for the Mir. They were walking on Mea Sharim Street, Rehov Mea Sharim, and they asked, can you direct me to the Mir Yeshiva? So somebody said, just stand still, the Mir Yeshiva will come to you, because they keep on adding buildings and the like. And of course, he was crippled for years and years with the multiple sclerosis, and he could barely walk and barely talk, and he was Moser Nefesh so much, and again, that was such an inspiration and a chizuk to everybody. But what's interesting is, when he would collect money for the Mir Yeshiva, and he saw an Avreich in Lakewood, you know, who needed it, and Ner Yisrael, he would just give out the money. He would say, listen, it doesn't have to go to Mir. You can go to Lakewood, go to Ner Yisrael, go to Telz. Ad kidei kach, that the Mir Yeshiva wasn't so happy with that, you know, because he's coming. So they actually had bodyguards accompany him on all trips, in which all money was immediately taken out of his possession and taken by them, so he shouldn't hand it out. But his sheet, again, halachically, I'm not going to deal with the problem. Well, if somebody gives you money for Mir, do you have the right to give it to Lakewood? But again, the Rosh Yeshiva actually does have the right, because the money is given, al das, the Rosh Yeshiva's decisions. But that same attitude, I'm not collecting for my maysad. What's my maysad? Does the Eibishter get more nachas from Mir than from Panovich? You know, the Eibishter gets nachas from Torah and mitzvos and chesed, and we need money to fuel that. But who cares if the money goes here or the money goes there. This was taka the lesson of Nisanel ben Tzuar, that Avodas Hashem is not about competition, and that is the idea of the Ner. The Katan is Madlik the Gadol, and when we give to others, we're not diminished, right? Those two practical ideas of Ner. But now, let me just give you a bridge to the other Pasuk, back in Pasuk Vav, a Perek Vav. That is, on one hand, we talk about a human soul as being similar to a Ner, but then we talk about mitzvos as being a Ner and Torah being a light. Next week, we'll talk about the difference between light and candle. Ki Ner mitzvah, the Torah or. The metaphor is we're describing the world as filled with darkness. But the mitzvos and the Torah give us the candle and the light that will pierce that darkness and show us the road. The Gemara describes life as being filled with pits and wild animals and ganavim. And through light, you can navigate your way around all of those difficulties. Now, it's interesting that on one hand, the human soul is called a Ner, and on the other hand, the mitzvos are called a Ner. So that indicates that with all of the passion that you have, it has to be limited and circumscribed by the mitzvos. You can't allow your spirituality to be unlinked from the mitzvos of Hashem. So here, let me tell you a beautiful thought from the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Rebbe of Chabad. For some reason, today is a Chabad, kind of a Chabad shir. Tzemach Tzedek, by the way, was a great gadol who was mekubal even by non-Chasidim. In fact, the Orech HaShulchan, who is the tipus of a Litvisha Misnaged Rav, the great Orech HaShulchan, got his smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. Why did he get his smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek? Because the Orech HaShulchan's first position was in a Chabad kehila, a Chabad city, town, and Chabad had a rule that every Rav didn't have to be Chabad, but he had to be approved by the Rebbe. So the Orech HaShulchan spent a month in the Tzemach Tzedek's house, and he was Meshabech the Tzemach Tzedek. Although the Tzemach Tzedek was a tremendous Mekubal who wrote 30,000 pages of Chassidus and Kabbalah, but he said, the Tzemach Tzedek knew that wasn't my thing, so he didn't talk about Chassidus even once in the whole month. We only talked about Shas and Poskim. So he actually praised the Tzemach Tzedek for not trying to convert him into Chassidus or the like. But the Yerucha Shulchan, who was a great Gaon, was made on the great Gaonis of the Tzemach Tzedek. And here's what the Tzemach Tzedek talks about. This is also in yesterday's Parsha. Levim have a mandatory retirement age. Pretty young. And the age looks younger and younger as I get older and older. 50 years old. Mandatory retirement age. That's it. Then you go to Miami. Now, the Mishnah in Chulin says that Kohanim and Levim have different disqualifications, and what disqualifies one does not disqualify the other. A Levi is disqualified by age. A Kohen is not. If a Kohen is 85 and he's able to do the Avoda, he can still do so. Mandatory retirement is only for Levim, not Kohanim. On the other hand, there is a disqualification that Kohanim have that Levim don't, and that is a physical blemish. If I have a broken leg, I cannot serve as a Kohen. Well, I can't be a Kohen either way, but if a Kohen has a broken leg, he cannot serve as a Kohen. If a Levi has a broken leg, he can. So the Mishnah in Chulin, without explaining why, makes the observation, you see it from the Psukim, that Levim are pasul in years, shanim, and Kohanim are pasul in mumin. Mumin are physical blemishes. But is there a svara? Is there a reason for that? Is that just a gezeiras hakasav? Is that just a pasuk? What would the reason be? So the Tzemach Tzedek says, Kohen and Levi represent two different ways of serving Hashem. The Kohen represents precision and consistency. The one thing you need to know about the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, the Korbanos, is you got to do it exactly the way it says it. The smallest deviation, as insignificant as you think it might be, can invalidate the whole service. Avodas Beis HaMikdash, Avodas HaMishkan, the things that a Kohen does, are not subject to improvisation, creativity, individuality. You gotta follow the rules exactly every time. To give you a little example, a Kohen has to wear Big Day Kahuna. Let's say a Kohen would like to embellish his Big Day Kahuna with a nice scarf or necktie. Well, you know, if a Kohen does avoda with an extra garment, all of the korbanos are pasul. If he wears shoes, after all, the Kohen is barefoot on a cold stone floor, let's say in the Beis HaMikdash, outside when it's raining. So he wants to put on slippers, socks, Crocs. No good. The avoda is going to be pasul. So the Kohen represents the idea of meticulous adherence to detail without deviation. Every day the same. Clockwork. The Levi, whose primary task, it wasn't their only task, but certainly in the Beis HaMikdash, when the Mishkan was no longer transported, their primary task was Shira V'Zimra, singing. Some were vocalists, some sang, some were instrumental, right? They were klishir. Now, D'oraisa, although the Chachamim later were misakein which songs should be sung when, but D'oraisa, every korban needed shir, but the shir could be their own composition. They could sing their own poetry, their own tunes. We still don't know exactly what music was in the Beis HaMikdash. So if the Kohen represents the person that has to follow the rules, the Levi represents the world of feeling and emotion and spontaneity and creativity and improvisation. Now, each derech of avoda has a positive and a negative. The Kohen's positive is he knows he's always doing the Ratzon Hashem because he's following the instructions exactly. But the problem is, at some point, he may do things out of habit, out of rote, without feeling. At some point, he may not be thinking about connecting to Hashem. He is so involved in the trees, in the details, that he doesn't think about connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was the old joke of the Hasidim, when the Misnagdim would criticize Hasidim for davening Mincha after Shkia. Not supposed to daven mincha after sunset. So the Hasidim would say, the problem with you Litvaks is you're so afraid of the Shkia that you're not afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't have Yiras Hashem, you have Yiras Shkia. So the downside of the derech of the Kohen is it may be a cold and unfeeling avoda that doesn't think about connecting to Hashem. The Levi, the positive side of the Levi, is the emotion and the feeling and the passion. But what sometimes happens is that people who are deeply spiritual in their feelings are sometimes impatient and even resentful of the details of halacha, because they feel that these details are pulling them down. Like, why does Hashem care if I say Kriya Shema? I mean, let's say, I'll give you a practical example. Mainly it's not good for a man because a woman doesn't have to, keeps him on Kriya Shema. Let's say I am saying Pesukei Dezimra and I am ecstatic. But the problem is I'm taking so long, by the time I reach Shema, it's going to be after Zman Kriya Shema. So somebody says to me, the halacha says, you better hurry up. Hurry up! I'm rapturous with ecstasy. Got to hurry up. So the person would say, are you telling me it's more important for me to, the expression, daven through, in other words, just mumble through this to get to Kriya Shema on time instead of my kavana and my devekas? Right? So you understand the problem. The problem is that deeply spiritual people are sometimes impatient with halachic detail. Sometimes. So, this is what the Tzemach Tzedek says. When you look at the Kohen does not face the danger of age, because since the Kohen, by definition, is doing the same thing over and over and over again, then age only makes him better at it. He did it for 50 years, did it for 60 years. So age is not the Kohen's danger. The danger the Kohen faces is physical incapacitation, meaning he can keep on going until the job becomes impossible, like a broken leg or a mum, etc. So the danger a Kohen faces in his Aveda is physical incapacitation. He does not face dangers of age, because age makes habituation even better. With the Levi, it's the other way around. When you live in the world of emotion and passion, you can transcend even your physical disabilities. Just like the mother can lift the car off the baby, even though she might be in the hospital for 6 months afterwards, powerful emotions can literally allow us to escape the body. So the Levi doesn't care about a mum. But what can happen? Emotional burnout. That a person cannot always exist on a high level of emotion year after year. So the retirement is young. The Levi, the world of passion, is endangered by habituation and age, but not by physicality. The world of routine is endangered by physical incapacity, but not by the passage of time. So that's why each one has a unique psul, because each one represents a unique derech in Avodas Hashem. Now, we know that each of us have to build a mishkan for Hashem in our own lives. Right? Vasuli mikdash, Hashem says, make for me a sanctuary. Vishochanti betocham, so I will dwell within them, within you. As the famous statement of the Sefer Charedim, beautiful nigun, Bilvavi mishkan evnech. I will build a dwelling place for you, Hashem, in my heart. And the same way that the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash requires Kohanim and Levi'im, in the Mishkan we build for Hashem in our heart, we have to have Kohanim and Levi'im. We need the Kohen to be sure that we don't just serve Hashem out of whatever makes us feel good, that we follow the halachos and we know the halachos, and that every din in the Shulchan Aruch that we're able to keep, we keep properly. We need the discipline and consistency and meticulousness of the Kohen, but we also need the passion and the excitement and the individuality of the Levi as well. Because Kohen without Levi can be dry and mechanical. And Levi without Kohen can be hefker, without boundaries, and ultimately egotistical. Because you're not really serving God, you're doing whatever makes you happy. You need the Kohen and the Levi. And I would suggest that this might be the meaning of the two references to Ner. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam refers to the passion and feeling that a human being brings to his Aveda, the Levi, and Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or refers to the idea of the Kohen, that our Ner has to be connected to Torah and Mitzvos and cannot just be a freewheeling spirituality. So therefore we're Mechaber, the Kohen, and the Levi. So wish you all a good week, and next week we'll continue with Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or.